Hey everyone, welcome back to the Commercial Real Estate Library podcast. Today we're discussing seniors housing. And this is a critical issue given where the demographics are shifting in our country and globally. According to Statistics Canada, the population of seniors aged 75 years and older in Canada is expected to grow by 111% between 2014 and 2034, while the total population of Canada is only expected to increase by 19% in the same time period. This trend has resoundingly captured the attention of investors and real estate developers, resulting in increased capital flows and construction in the seniors housing and long-term care sector in Canada. Today, we'll be joined by President and CEO of Sienna Senior Living, Lois Cormack. Sienna Senior Living is one of the largest operators of seniors housing and long-term care facilities. They have more than 70 facilities across Canada, but largely in Ontario and BC. They have over 12,000 employees and serve over 10,000 seniors. Before we dive in, I want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, KMB Law. KMB Law are corporate real estate lawyers that specialize in the acquisition, disposition, and financing of commercial real estate properties. For the same reason you use a commercial real estate agent when you're doing your leasing or selling your apartment buildings, you're going to want to have a commercial real estate lawyer, a specialist. Check them out at kmblaw.com. I also want to say a thank you to our second sponsor, Mizrahi Developments. Mizrahi Developments was founded on the principle of changing expectations for the better in the development industry. They do that every day, and they have some of the most unique projects across Canada. You can check out their projects online by visiting MizrahiDevelopments.ca. That's MizrahiDevelopments.ca. If you like this podcast, please support us by supporting them. And enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Commercial Real Estate Library. I'm Dama Tamanwala. You know my co-host, Garrett McGilvery, and we are joined by the head, the CEO of Sienna Living, Sienna Senior Living, Lois Cormack. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the podcast.
Pleased to be here. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
So the first question is just, can you give our audience a little background of, you know, who you are and how you got to where you are?
Yeah, so I've been in the senior living business actually since I was a teenager. I started out working as a personal support worker in a long-term care home when I was a teenager as a student. And at that time decided, you know, I looked at the owner and thought, I'd really like to have her job.
I think I can make some improvements around here.
Yeah, I think I could. Yeah. So I set that as my career goal, was to, you know, be in the sector and, you know, own or operate a senior living center.
And Lois, is this in Canada?
In Canada, yeah, small town in Ontario.
Okay.
I lived in a farm outside of Lindsay, and it was in Cannington. Yep. So that was sort of my beginning in long-term care. Worked as a personal support worker, and partway through the summer, she asked if I would go into the kitchen and work as a dietary aide.
Right.
So I really got to learn the business from the ground up, and mm-hmm. saw what a difference the team members make to residents' lives. And I really enjoyed the seniors and the residents, and just saw, you know, what a difference it makes to them. And, you know, in long-term care, seniors need care. They need services. They have dementia, have some behaviors, and need care. So in many cases, the staff became like family to them, and it was just a really enjoyable experience. So I just decided that that's what I wanted to do, and I kind of set my career path on that. And, you know, I made, you know, in the time some silly choices that were kind of an indirect way to get there, but I kept coming back to senior living. So I went into healthcare for a little while, into administration, and then quickly decided I wanted to get back to long-term care. And previous to Sienna, I was running kind of a mid-sized senior living company here in Ontario for, it was a family-owned company. So we owned and operated, it was called Specialty Care. We owned and operated, at the time it was mostly long-term care, but we diversified into retirement, through development and acquisition. And that's where I really kind of got the most business part of the real estate development. And then I was recruited to Siena about 6 years ago. And to me, that was a great opportunity to learn how to run a public company. I knew the business really well, but it was an exciting opportunity to get into the public company.
Right. And since then, the company has been on kind of a vertical trajectory. Well, it has. It has been, right? I think you won a number of awards even recently for, there's top CEOs, best, I'm going to butcher this, but best culture in a company, something like that. And noteworthy to your investors, most returns for your investors, something like that. There's a number of awards, which is very impressive. So what do we want to go to next?
Well, thank you. That's thank you.
Yeah.
You were talking about long-term care. So what, if you could just describe the different types of seniors living that are available to people?
Because question.
You know, you were talking a lot about long-term care, but what are the other types of seniors living?
Senior living, there's a range. There's anywhere from seniors apartments, which is really just independent seniors apartments, rental apartments.
Anybody who's over 65, able-bodied, and can take care of themselves.
Pretty much. Or it could be younger than 65, but typically anyone that's looking for seniors' apartments want to be with other seniors, and that would be, a purpose-built seniors' apartments. And often they're close to a retirement residence or a campus where they could access services. So, many developers, if they're building a senior living campus, they would build a seniors' apartments and then a retirement home. And the seniors living in the apartment could access the clubhouse and the bar and all of the amenity space, the theater in the retirement home, and pay a membership fee or a club fee and also have their meals.
Right, which would make the transition, if you do transition, a lot easier.
Right.
And certainly from especially the daughter or son who's kind of leading the charge there, it makes it easier for them to have that discussion as well, I imagine.
Exactly. So there's not a lot of those in Canada today. There's freestanding seniors apartments. There's seniors apartments near retirement residences, but not a lot of them. So then you have independent living, which is a retirement residence. You have a range from independent living, independent supportive living, memory care, and assisted living. And basically in retirement residence, that's, the seniors typically want most of their meals. So if it's independent living, they could just get a few meals or none, but typically would want to get some meals. That's usually why they move into retirement residence. And most often when seniors move into retirement residence, and their families more so, want to know that they can access services when they need them and they won't have to move out or move somewhere else if they need some care and services if their health declines. So in all of our communities, we offer assisted living services as well.
Right.
And then there's also memory care. So if a senior has cognitive impairment or dementia, they need specific memory care. Many of the campuses have specific memory care units within a retirement residence that someone with dementia can move into the memory care unit.
Right.
And what are the different types of, say, capitalization rates for these different types of properties? Is there different risks that are associated, obviously with operating them because you need more staff or more, the higher the amount of services that you have, the more staff that you have to have, obviously. But what are sort of the cap rates for these types of properties?
Yeah, so the range would be seniors apartments would be the least resource intense, because when you think about senior living, it's not just real estate, it's also an operating business. We have a lot of staff because we're providing hospitality services. Great meals and leisure activities and so on.
Right.
And from the furthest end of the spectrum is long-term care, where we're also providing healthcare services. And we have nurses and physicians and telemedicine and giving complex medications, IV therapy, and wound care.
Right.
So you have the full range. So in terms of cap rates, if you look at, it also varies by not only asset type, but the type of... the quality of the asset.
Right.
So, for example, a really high-end retirement residence, which offers a campus of living, so it'd be independent living, assisted living, and memory care. say in lower mainland Vancouver or in Vancouver, could be a 5 cap rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Around 5, definitely sub, around
yeah,
5.
Yeah, roughly.
And, you know, the average rent would be, say, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month.
Wow.
Say, you say the same for downtown Toronto, urban Toronto. So that would easily attract around a 5-ish cap rate, potentially. And then when you go out to, you know, say the GTA or Greater Vancouver area into the same asset class, but the average rent might be $4,000, $5,000 a month, you're probably getting into around a 6.
Okay.
So, and then when you go to long-term care, where, you know, the government pays for the care, the mm-hmm. care is funded by the regulatory authority because the resident has to be eligible to get into long-term care and need services. That's why they're there.
This is all long-term care the government funds? Yep.
Well, pretty much across the country, the resident has to be eligible, so they go through this access process, so they have to be eligible. The regulatory authority then pays for the care, typically, and the resident pays a co-payment, which can be adjusted. What the amount they pay can be adjusted based on income in other provinces. In Canada, it's not. It's just a set rate. Or right. In Ontario, rather, it's a set rate. Other provinces, it's means tested. So that's the model in long-term care. And cap rates for long-term care, again, could range anywhere in BC from a sub-7 to, you know, older class long-term care. You know, if you're getting into a product that's maybe 30 or 40 years old,
right.
There could be a range, a really higher end range.
Mm-hmm. Right. And just for reference for those listening, so I mentioned before we turn these on, you know, in the GTA last quarter, our average cap rate for multifamily, just general apartments, was around 3.5%. So, like, I imagine with the supply and demand factors that are going on, that people are dying to get into, bad choice of words, people are really trying to get into seniors housing. Like from an investment perspective. So like, can you talk about like some of the operating challenges or, you know, what differentiates a group like Sienna to, you know, myself, I try and just get into seniors housing and buy a 65 unit seniors home, you know, is there a struggle? Is
like
it really
investing in a REIT or rather than investing on your own?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, the business, the senior living is different than real estate in that we're an operating company. Like it's different than office or multi-res because our business is really operations. Sienna has over 12,000 employees.
Right.
And so culture to us is really important. We're offering hospitality, real estate, and healthcare. So kind of a mm-hmm. some version of all three, depending on which end of the mm-hmm. spectrum you're on. So you do have to have a very sophisticated operating platform. So to provide a great resident experience, provide a great team member experience, as well as look after the real estate. So not everybody, there are high barriers to entry. It's highly regulated, both retirement and long-term care. In long-term care, there's a lot of regulations and inspections and inspected by regulatory authorities on a regular basis and held to meet the standards. In retirement living, you have to have a license through the Retirement Home Authority. Every province has one.
Mm-hmm.
And so to build a retirement home, you have to have a license and you have to have the financial backing or be able to get a mortgage and lending.
Right, not easy.
In order to do that, you have to have a feasibility study which proves there's enough demand in that market.
Right.
And so there are high barriers to entry. So when you're thinking about investing in this asset class, you want to know that you've got a sustainable business model, that you've got, you know, you're investing in a company with a good culture that's got the operating platform and will be successful in the long term.
Right. Right. So
there's a lot that goes into managing a senior's home.
Yeah. The reason that I asked a question like that is because I have friends who aren't even in real estate and they go, oh, Well, like we should, why don't we get into seniors housing? We should just do something like that. So it's fun, you know.
It's different from multifamily where you can buy a triplex, a quadplex, and then just be like rent it out type of thing. You know, you can't do that with seniors housing.
You can't do that with seniors housing.
Right.
You're like, we have our team members, first of all, are in the, they work 24/7.
Yeah.
It's around the clock. A lot of our team, the majority of our team members are unionized. So you're dealing with collective agreements and you have to know bargaining. But most importantly, you really have to have a great culture and provide a great team member experience, because you're relying on those team members to provide a great service and experience to the residents. And you will only have satisfied residents if you've got a great team member that likes to work with seniors. And it's difficult, it can be difficult work, working 24/7, so weekends and evenings. And so it's not, you know, you really have to have a great culture to develop and nurture and recruit the right kinds of team members that are aligned with the values of the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not, wouldn't advise you just to.
No, I know. And I like, you know, my grandparents are in a seniors, I think they're in an independent living facility, but they're in kind of different stages, my granddad and my grandma. And like, to keep them both happy is so challenging. Yeah. They're not in one of your facilities, so maybe they should be. You know, it's like, is there enough activity? Okay, the food's great, but now I'm just eating too much and sitting around. Like, is it, like, I imagine it's there's so much work that goes into it. So
it is, there is a lot of work. And for many seniors, a residential setting is a great thing, because they've been living at home alone, they may have lost a spouse, they may have health issues. And when they move into retirement home, most often they say, I wished I'd done this earlier.
Yeah.
I've made so many friends, the food's great, there's so much to do. Whenever I tour our residences, 95% of the time, that's what I hear from residents.
Right.
You know, they will say, yes, it's a transition. You know, I've lost a lot of my friends, I miss my house. But they also can bring their pets, they can keep their car, keep their independence, yet have a whole new lifestyle.
Yeah, it's usually it's the right move. Yeah. How is the industry fragmented? Is there a lot of rivalry between like the top players? Like, you guys are one of the biggest. You know, is it a competitive business all across Canada? Is it, you know, how is the market landscape there?
I would say our sector, and I often hear this from other sectors, when we all get together, we have a lot of industry events, we're all friends.
Yeah.
We support one another, we're all active in our industry associations. Every province has an industry association. We're all on the boards and involved on the committees, and we collaborate and make sure that we put our best people forward to sit on those boards and committees. So I would say it's very friendly and collaborative. We do compete, but it's only in certain markets. So, for example, you know, in a lot of markets, you know, we might be the only retirement home in that market, like in Port Coquitlam, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We're the only two retirement homes in that market right now. In other markets, we may have a lot of competition, so we're competing in that specific market, be it Kingston or Ottawa or Waterloo, where you've got five or six competitors in the same area, and then that's who you're competing with in that market. And there you're competing on price and service offering, you're competing for talent. We may, you know, post a position, and we try not to recruit from each other directly, but if you post a position and one of our team members leaves for another opportunity, well then, you know, we haven't maybe done the best job in terms of keeping our talent happy.
Right, right. I imagine something you always are thinking about, but having a top culture. I really wish I knew the exact name of that award.
It's Waterstone Human Capital Most Admired Canadian Culture.
Okay,
yeah. So you have to there's a lot of criteria.
Yeah.
And you can only apply for it every 3 years. So we can apply again this year, and our goal is to win that award again.
Well, that sounds like a really good award.
And it's tough to do when you're running a 24/7 business, and a lot of our workers are only part-time. So how do you engage team members that are only work evenings and nights?
Right.
Happy.
To be happy and keep them engaged and understanding the vision, mission, and values is a challenging job. That's why we have a great communications department.
Woo! Shout out over there. Yeah. Off camera. With the, like, your business model heavily relies on sort of obviously an aging demographic, and probably the biggest aging demographic that's about to hit the seniors housing hurdle is the boomers, because they're in their 60s and their 70s and they're about to hit in that space. Is seniors housing presently in place in Canada prepared for this wave of, you know, seniors that are going to be going, moving into these homes?
Well, I think that's really what the sector's doing now. There's a lot of new supply being built across the country in preparation for that. The oldest baby boomer now is probably 72, mm-hmm. 73. So the average age of our residents now is about 85. Mm. So it's probably 12 to 15 years away before baby boomers really hit the retirement living senior apartment market. And I think that they will just require or want so many more options, like different lifestyle choices, different product types and service options and lifestyle options. So I don't know that we're ready. And I think right now the fundamentals of building and developing in Canada are a bit challenging, because with the cost of land and development charges mm-hmm. and cost of construction, it's difficult to make projects work and get an adequate return, you know, in the GTA or downtown in the urban cores of Vancouver, Toronto. So that's the challenge, is meeting, getting the right product mix where the demand is for future years and getting the returns. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you look at long-term care in Ontario, specifically, we haven't really built any new bed stock for over 15 years. There's a wait list of over 30,000 seniors waiting for a long-term care bed. And that's just because the policy environment hasn't enabled the new development of long-term care beds.
And what happens if they can't get in? What if you're the 30,000th person on the list? Like, you just out of luck?
Well, I think that's where you see, you know, you've heard of hallway medicine and the challenge with seniors waiting in hospitals and in hallway medicine. Well, that's where that's coming from, because of a high level of assisted or alternate level of care, where it's basically seniors and others in hospitals that don't need to be there, can't go home, but there's no other solution right now. And it's across Canada, but it's quite prevalent in Ontario and in the GTA.
Right.
So and you know, hospitals really are not a great place for seniors to be, because that's where they're going to pick up infections.
Yeah.
You know, they're not getting the exercise and activity they need, and can very soon develop disability unnecessarily, perhaps, that could have been avoided.
Yeah, because hospital is meant to be in and out, not to stay there for a long time. You go in, you get healed, you get out.
Yeah, it seems like almost there should be it seems kind of one of those human right things that the government should take care of, but obviously, you know, their involvement doesn't always have the best result. If they are the ones mostly doing long-term care, there should be, like, you'd think there's some sort of incentive for developers, even in Ontario. You know, we talk about, like, we have an affordable housing crisis. There should also be a category for long-term care and for all types of...
Yeah. We're working with the current government through our sector associations, working with the current government on a solution for this. Because, you know, this government has announced that they would like to build another 15,000 new long-term care beds to help this alleviate this hallway medicine. And because, frankly, the province needs new long-term care beds, we still have about 30,000 what we call C-class beds, which were built, you know, 40 to 50 years ago, which really do not meet the needs for long-term care residents today. So there's a need to not only rebuild these older 30,000 C-class beds, but also build new stock. Mm-hmm. So we are, our sector association is working with the current government on a solution and a program to enable the development of new stock and to rebuild these older beds. But it will require, you know, some significant creativity, just because of the price of land and development charges and construction costs.
Yeah. And those are only going up.
Yeah. And by the way, like, kind of a natural question is, like, once this baby boom is done, is there any risk of overbuilding, or it's so undersupplied right now that that's not really a real challenge that we could expect in the, I guess that's a long way off.
Well, 40 years.
Yeah, I think it's probably a long way off. If you look at the average age now is 85.
Yeah.
You know, baby boomers, that demographic and the growth, you know, out way beyond the next 40 years is significant. It's hard to imagine on the other side what that might look like.
Yeah.
Having, you know, some of the buildings today that are 20, 30 years old will become redundant, but they may become a great asset class for other, like, seniors' apartments or for mental health or other kinds of facilities.
And there might be better medicine, so they might live until 110.
Yes.
So therefore, the average age might go up. You never know.
Yeah. Well, I believe that.
And that is true. For sure, people are living longer and healthier.
Mm-hmm. More technology, live longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lois, can you talk about, so you mentioned you've been at Sienna now for how many years? You said
six years.
So what's been happening at the company since then? And, you know, how many seniors facilities do you guys operate? Where are you going?
So today we own and operate 70 residences. We also do third party management for both not-for-profit and well as for for-profit. So we third-party manage 17 properties. We manage 8 for the Sabra Healthcare REIT, which is a U.S. REIT. And then we manage for a number of not-for-profit long-term care homes. And the 70 that we own and operate ourselves is a mix of retirement, and which is private pay, and then long-term care, which I've explained that program is government pays for the care and resident pays a co-payment. So our mix is about 45% private pay, 55% funded or long-term care, government-backed, which we like because that's a balanced portfolio. When I joined the company, we were about 90% long-term care, and we were just in Ontario. And so we set a goal at that time to be more diversified, so, you know, expand, diversify into other markets beyond Ontario. So we'd like to grow across the country and to have a more balanced portfolio. Our goal is to keep it around 50-50. Mm-hmm. So we've got a little way to go to get to 50% balanced portfolio. And that would entail about $350 million of acquisition just to get to 50-50. So even though we're close, it still is a significant amount of growth if we just did it through acquisition. But our intention is to do it both through some development as well as through acquisition.
Okay.
Is property management a normal thing in the industry? I don't think I've ever heard of somebody property managing a senior's home.
Well, we do. It's not just property management. We manage the whole business.
Yeah.
The operations. I explained the entire operation.
Yeah.
We do that for other, for not-for-profits.
Right.
Okay.
Not-for-profits,
like there's hospitals that own and operate long-term care. There's charities. There's even municipalities. And it's not really their area of expertise. And so they will hire a manager like us, who has the expertise, the systems, and the sophistication to provide that service.
Right.
Which is a great model because helps.
Thank goodness. Yeah. They're hiring people who know what they're doing.
So. 100%.
Yeah.
There's a lot, just bringing it into the sort of a little more into my field, technology. There's a lot of different technologies that are reshaping a lot of different asset classes, like offices benefiting from, you know, smart HVAC systems, hotels are doing a lot more automation. I think Alibaba released a robot hotel or something like that, and micro hotels. Is there any technology that you see that's going to like affect the seniors housing, whether in from the operation standpoint or even from the client entertainment and or, you know, keeping them active type of standpoint?
Yeah. For sure, technology is a big enabler for the business. Regardless of how much, and I'll touch on each of the areas of technology, but it really is a human services business. Mm-hmm. Seniors come to a retirement residence because they need services and care and hospitality and long-term care. It's really health services. So it is a human services business. So I can't see that technology will ever replace that.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be too psyched about a robot.
No, caring for them. Robot nurse. And it is about the warmth of human connection, because residents really want that. They will always say, I love the staff. Like it really is about the team member that they trust and know that, they're going to care for them and meet their needs. Having said all of that, technology is a big enabler in three areas. The first one is in terms of running our business, the back office. So just the IT, all of the financial systems, our human resource management system, our customer relation management system, all of that has just been huge enabler for us to be more efficient, because we service, properties across the country. Right now we're just in Ontario and BC, but we have to have a really good procurement process and purchase order mm-hmm. system and all of those to enable the communities, the executive directors and managers to focus on the resident and team member. We want to take all that back office work off them to the extent that we can. So we do that through the technology. Mm-hmm. The same with human resource management, to make it really easy for team members to go on and manage their schedules and change their when they move and make it in real time and easy. So on the business itself, technology is a huge enabler, and that's going to continue to provide us with the opportunity to be more efficient.
Yeah.
Then on the team member side, for us, because it's a 24/7 business, a lot of our team members are personal support workers, they're unregulated. It's how do we communicate them in a two-way dialogue, so that we can get their input. Mm. And so that's going to be an opportunity, I think, with better technology and applications for us to reach out to them and for team member engagement and to provide other, wellness services and so on through technology. And then on the resident side, I think you touched on them. There's just the safety and security. And we already use a lot of devices around fall prevention and alarms and so on and safety. But then there's also just entertainment. Mm. I was in mm-hmm. a property over Christmas, and they're doing Wi-Fi bowling, and they have these competitions between residents, and it's it's really enabled a major lifestyle. And they don't even have devices; they're just using
the remote.
So it really enables residents who were inactive before that might be sight impaired or hearing impaired to participate and really enjoy it. And then the other is just the connectivity for us to be able to connect to family members and residents. Right. If there's an outbreak, to be able to notify them in real time in a nice way through different apps. Mm-hmm. So technology really will enable the business in many ways. Hmm. But I don't think it will ever replace human connection and human services and what the residents come for.
Right. But do you think technology will potentially push that age gap out, in terms of 65-year-olds are the ones that kind of might move into a senior's living apartment and try doing that, but will technology...
65 seems really young.
65 is young. My parents are 70 and they're still at home doing five. Whatever. So I'm not saying anything bad to 65-year-olds out there. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
It's like say 70...
You can
say
get a discount say at the
80-year-old. Yeah, yeah. So okay. Say an 80-year-old. Yeah. But then that 80-year-old might be able to live at home until they're 85 or 87 or something like that. Does technology also pose a threat to the clientele that you might be receiving, but you might have received them sooner without technology type of thing?
I think for sure seniors are staying at home longer. 5 years ago, our average age would have been 83 mm-hmm. and it's now, 85. So it's constantly mm-hmm. going up. I was in the US a week ago and, I think their average age is now 89. And we have a residence, in North York where the average age is 94. So I think it sort of depends.
And that's medicine and technology enabled, right?
Hmm. So for sure, I think that technology as well as affluence, there's a number of factors, access to home care services will enable seniors to live at home longer, which is great. But it won't. At some point, a senior living at home alone, even if they can afford 24/7 care, isn't a great experience because there's social isolation. You know, they develop, you know, maybe some dementia and so on. They need social interaction for the most part. Yeah, and that's community. Why seniors move. And once they move, they say, I wished I'd done this sooner, because they get great meals. They make friends. There's things to do. They're active. They're engaged.
Right.
So it's really a lifestyle option that, you know, living at home alone, no matter how much technology, isn't going to replace. Yeah. And also, if you need care, it's much more economical to receive care in a cluster environment than, you know, 24/7 in your own home. So right. At some point, for a lot of seniors, that won't be an option if they need a lot of care.
Mm-hmm. Because it's expensive. And
it's expensive.
Well, yeah.
Right.
The community and element is a major thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Can you talk about... The two-part question. Can you talk about, you know, is there anything in the industry as a whole that kind of keeps you up at night? And also, you know, what is the biggest opportunity that you see over the next few years?
I think the biggest challenge we have is talent always, because we want really good team members first that really want to work with seniors, because, you know, it's just... It's a different business. Mm-hmm. It's not like retail where it's transactional. They're going to be working with the same seniors. You know, our average length of stay is about 3 years, which is a great thing, because we recruit a lot of people from hospitality, and they really like it because their guest is now, they develop a relationship with. They're not just there for the night. So I think talent is always going to be a challenge. And also our opportunity as we continue to develop our culture and our team member experience, that hopefully we can continue to recruit and retain the best. But personal support workers in particular is challenging, because there's just not enough people going into that sector. So we really do rely heavily on immigration and a policy to make that an attractive option for people to look at as a career choice. And then I think the other challenge, I think, for the entire sector is going to be matching supply and demand with the right product for the right level of demand. There's a lot of seniors that don't have the affluence to be able to afford, you know, $5,000 a month, $6,000, $7,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
That might have, you know, income-sensitive market
that
also can benefit from a residential setting. And the challenge is to be able to build product and get a return on the right type of residential setting.
Yeah.
Retirement living or long-term care, where you can get an adequate return given the fundamentals of the market today.
Right. Especially with interest rates so low, and you think about those guys who are no longer working, you know, their $1 million that they have to last is, you know, and that $6,000 chunk coming out every month is getting a little challenging when you're getting a 0% interest or whatever, right? So, it's definitely an interesting...
Well, and from the operator and developer point of view, just being able to make projects work, new developments work, where you can get an adequate return, you know, building, when you can't really build projects downtown Toronto or in greater Vancouver area where the demand is to make a project work because of the cost of construction, land, and development charges.
We have a good portion of our audience is brokers. Is there any specific geography you want them to send you land opportunities from? Or, you know?
I think any... right now, there is a little, there's some excess supply, certainly in markets like Ottawa are oversupplied. So I think, you know, anyone that's looking at developing really has to be smart about doing a feasibility study and looking at, you know, when projects are coming on and not oversupply any given market. We've seen that in the U.S. with oversupply, and we're seeing that now in Ontario and across Canada in some markets where there's a little bit of oversupply. Now, I think over time that will level out because the demand is going to be there in the long term.
Right.
So I think we just have to be smart about where we're building and not oversupplying any one market and the timing of projects in order to meet the supply and demand. So yeah, I would say any market has to be, you have to have enough income qualified population to make a project work.
Right.
So you don't want to be building, you know, large retirement communities in really small rural communities.
Right.
Even long-term care homes don't really, there's not enough demand in a small community. So people may have to travel a little bit to get to a retirement home or a long-term care home.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And just as a side note, I never realized until talking with you the logistical complications that, you know, running 70-odd-ish retirement homes would have to be. Because you're in smaller markets like Port, I forget what
you said. Coquitlam.
Coquitlam.
The only retirement home there.
Yeah.
Two retirement homes.
Two.
Two.
There are rather
twice
but,
as good.
But not in our market. We tend to have a...
But even just
but there's irrelevant. Other markets.
They can't compete.
There's other markets like Campbellford where we have a retirement residence there, and there's right now we're the only one in Campbellford.
Yeah, and getting the necessary supplies to that retirement home to be able to even maintain the operations must be like, that's why you have a back office of staff in order to take care of that stuff. But just thinking about that is crazy because you're getting medical grade equipment for, you know, a number of things because you have nurses on staff, physicians, whatever they might be, as well as food, stuff like that. And, you know, you're getting them from where? You know, you have power of scale so you can, you know, get bigger operators to sell you stuff and then logistically send it out. I don't know. Just to me, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, well,
especially when you're
that's why we
Canada
do all of our
now.
Procurement from centrally. We procure everything centrally, so we have contracts so that we get the best options available to us through our all of our suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take all of that work so the communities don't have to worry about that. So they just order what they need, and we've looked after all of the procurement.
Right. There's another reason why DEMA Investment Inc. might not be able to operate a seniors housing facility. Don't have that scale.
You can stay in apartments.
Yeah. Well, happy
you're an
to.
Expert.
I leave it exactly. Leave it to the experts for seniors. So
yeah.
And what I'm just thinking, if there's anything else that we want to cover before we move to the final question. The final.
No.
I just find it so interesting that like how you mentioned having the right asset class, like the right subtype for each individual market, because like when we talk about, I'm just looking on my sheet here, the population of seniors aged 75 years and older in Canada expected to grow by 111% between 2014 and 2031. It's like, it's just insane that like with that demand, there's still the challenge of where of you have to be so correct and precise in building. So really, I think it's really cool. It's a really interesting industry.
Well, it's versus like some places in the United States where they just, you know, right now in Texas, people are just building fields of homes, just fields and fields of it, just because there's like whatever, land is cheap, everything's good, construction cost is low, they're just doing single family homes everywhere.
Right.
You know, and they don't really care so much about like the phase four and phase five of their project. They're just like, whatever, let's do it, lot development.
Yeah, that's always healthy. That's a good recipe.
Yeah, and senior living, I mean, and that's where, you know, you have to know that there's enough income qualified demand. And so have a good feasibility study. Mm. So you're building the right product for the right market and know that you've got access to staff and team members. That's so you really can't go into markets that are less than 10,000.
Right.
And really the right market is around 50,000. And then you don't want to go there if there's already about 8 properties or 9 properties because it's already well supplied.
Right. Or like beside a 1 million square foot Amazon distribution center because they'll just hire.
They'll just take all the staff.
Before we go to the final question, you have met these lovely people. Do you have any questions or do you have any questions?
I did, actually. So seniors living in Canada has evolved from a need-based institutional model that was focusing on healthcare to more of a hospitality model, which is focusing on engagement and wellness lifestyle.
So I was wondering what were some of the key drivers that brought about this change in terms of what did people start thinking, why did they want to move to something like this?
Well, I think in Canada today it's actually still primarily need-based.
long-term care is definitely need-based, and that's, you know, you have to be eligible, and usually you've got multiple health problems. But even in retirement, typically seniors don't want to move into retirement residence. They want to live at home as long as they can until there's some sort of a need, like a spouse, they lose a spouse, or they develop some sort of health services need, or they just get depressed and socially isolated, and their families are saying, you know, wouldn't you have a better lifestyle in, you know, a retirement residence? And then the family brings them out and starts touring places. And we often see that just after Christmas or Thanksgiving. And we've noticed just recently that after a weekend, we get more calls on a Monday. And it's usually because families have, you know, visited their parent over the holiday season or whatever, and realize, I think this is the time to start looking. So, but having said that, you know, there are some seniors, and, you know, I met with a group of seniors in BC over the holidays, and this resident said that he just decided he didn't want to live alone anymore, and he did his own spreadsheet. He went and visited all the competition and did a spreadsheet of all the pros and cons of the competition and got his daughter to drive him around.
Oh my God.
And ended up living with us. So
it's like you when you're
it
old.
Is a, but I think those that are choosing on their own that it's time, it is, they are looking for friendships, something to do, good food, lifestyle, and they're quite discriminating, and they really are very smart and active and want to be involved and stay involved in their community. And that's why location for those types of retirement residents, they love being close to the amenities, their local services, physicians and dry cleaners and grocery stores and drugstore. Being close to that, it's important that if they can walk, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And
yeah, well, first of all, I mean, just your story, I mean, starting off as a personal support worker and being where you are, that's very inspiring. So I just wanted to let you know that. Thank you for being here and giving us that. From a diversification perspective, when you're looking at your portfolio, I think it's mostly in BC and in Ontario, if I'm not mistaken. What do you say to skeptics that say Seattle Living isn't as diversified as we would like them to be? And do you have any plans for diversification throughout Canada or anywhere else?
Well, I think on the diversified, in fact, I would say if you look at, you know, comparatively, we're probably one of the most diversified in that we've got a healthy balance between long-term care, which is really like an infrastructure type investment. It's very secure, stable, predictable cash flow, secures the dividend. And then we've got also the growth with retirement, which is a little more, it's riskier because it's exposed, you know, to market fundamentals, supply and demand. But also in housing, you know, the prices of housing and whether a senior can sell their home or not, but also more growth potential. So for several years, we had great, you know, same property growth as we're leasing up and so on. So I think, you know, we are diversified, and our goal is to grow geographically across the country as those opportunities present themselves. We haven't done it just because the right opportunity hasn't presented itself to date. And we are very strategic about growth because we want to, because it is an operating business, as we've discussed, we want to go where we can get a bit of a portfolio and create a team and a platform in a new province. Because there's also the regulatory overlay on the business as well in a new province.
Mm. Gotcha.
Okay, so this is, thank you, Prey and Sean. This is the final question. So first, just to, you know, again, acknowledge you. This is always like a little strange to bring up, but one of the few, one of now three female guests that we've been lucky to have on, and like obviously an absolute powerhouse, and you have like, you know, again, won so many awards for your company and as an individual, and it's really impressive and great to see. You know, so yeah, that's just awesome. Okay, this is the final question. It's called The Three Truths. So imagine years from now, you live a very long and successful life and achieve everything that you ever wanted to. And for whatever reason, all of the things throughout your life, all the things that you've written, the books that you've written, recorded, interviews that you've done, they've all been erased. But your family and friends are around you, and they give you three sticky notes. You can write three short notes to pass on to your family and friends and the people who love you. What would you put on those notes?
This is whether how you want to live your life. It could be spiritual in nature, whatever.
Could be
it is.
Business.
It could be business. Could be like, you know, buy Tesla stocks. You know, whatever it might be.
yeah. Well, or don't. Or don't.
Or don't buy it. Short Tesla stocks.
Yeah.
I would say plan your life.
Yeah.
Spend the people with time you love. And tell them you love them. You know, set your priorities based on spending time with people you love. Plan your life. And live every minute. Live every minute to its fullest.
Awesome.
That's great.
Those are, that's like such a challenging question. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Awesome to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the opportunity.